Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along. Thanks for clicking play this week. We are having our roundtable discussion, which you can hear on the radios Friday afternoons at 10 minutes of 5. Occasionally, this will double as the podcast. And we are going to chat with Becky Gray and Billy Ball this week about a look into some actions by the North Carolina House Speaker and also climate change as it relates to a new UN report, as well as the latest request for disaster relief from the governor coming out of Hurricane Florence. Governor Roy Cooper wants state lawmakers to appropriate $750 million toward Hurricane Florence relief when they return to Raleigh on Monday. This request is part of a long-term ask from the Democratic governor of $1.5 billion. The General Assembly has a bit more than $2 billion at its disposal, having saved considerably in recent years to the state's rainy day fund. State funding will be just a small portion of recovery. Damage estimates currently sit at $13 billion. Much of the relief will come from the federal level. Cooper wants to rebuild smarter and says buyouts should be part of the plan moving forward. Senate Leader Phil Berger, House Speaker Tim Moore are reviewing the proposal. Becky, last week we talked about how everyone was getting along so well. Can that continue with this plan?
Of course it can. I think it's important in the introduction you mentioned that Governor Cooper has made a proposal. The General Assembly has set aside the money. The General Assembly is reviewing it. They come back on Monday. So absolutely, and I think this is an indication that they are all getting along. There's just tremendous needs in the eastern part of the state, whether it's housing, schools, building, infrastructure. I mean, that's something that a lot of people aren't talking about. The water and sewer systems in the eastern part of the state were compromised just because of the age of them and the wear and tear over the years. And then with the storm and the flooding, taking terrible things, the farms, all of this, the needs are there. I cannot imagine at this point, Jeff, that there's going to be a lot of arguments. I think the thing that's important, and I think the discussions that we'll see continuing out of the governor's office, and certainly on Monday in the General Assembly sessions, there's $2 billion. Thank goodness that money's there. Mm-hmm. Really smart planning, but it's only $2 billion.
Sure.
So we have to spend that money very carefully. And there will be some discussion, I'm sure, within the members of the General Assembly.
Some deviation, but overall, this would amount to using about two-thirds of what's in the rainy day fund. You're okay with that?
I am fine with that, but here's the deal. Mm-hmm. This is what the money was set aside for, but it is very important to remember that if they deplete that rainy day fund, we're going to need another one. We don't know when, but at some point there's going to be another storm that's going to hit North Carolina. We're going to need that money. And so as we look towards November, as we look toward the election, I think it's important to ask that question. Are we going to have leadership that is going to recognize the importance of building up those rainy day funds? We need it now. We're going to need more tomorrow.
Billy, what do you make of this plan from Cooper?
You know, as far as the bipartisanship goes, I think it's really something to see an idea come out of the governor's office and get a response from the legislature like, we're going to review this, as opposed to immediately saying, what a ridiculous idea, or we completely oppose this. It is interesting to see some sort of accord going on right now with these folks. And that said, I think that the governor referred to his plan as a down payment. And alluded many times to the many, many needs that portions of our state will need, not just today and the days after these storms, but in the years to come. You know, I saw one estimate that the amount the governor was putting forward was about 40% of the unmet needs that the state has after federal funding comes in. And so it's a pretty comprehensive plan that we're looking at from the governor with regards to small business funding and affordable housing and about $200 million, if I recall, being put to struggling farmers. There's also some money put to relocating families that are in the floodplain and also some consideration of a buyout program to move some of these hog farm pits. So I think we're really happy to see that the governor taking those environmental concerns in there and also talking about some new predictive technology.
All right. Meanwhile, a United Nations report on climate change was released this week, and it has some dire details. Massive heat waves, increasingly heavy rainfall, and further economic impacts were among the top-line issues. The UN panel said a strong risk of crisis is possible by 2040 and called on, quote, rapid, far-reaching actions to avert calamity all over the world, close quote. From each of you, what is something feasible that you think our state lawmakers can do on this, and also one thing that individuals can do? Billy?
You know, I think that that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things, you know, tying it back to this hurricane discussion that we have going on right now, the governor said some days back that this is an unprecedented storm and it requires an unprecedented response, I think, to paraphrase the governor. There's a lot of concern that this storm is not going to be so unprecedented in the years to come. And while we may not be talking about increasing the frequency of these hurricanes, we're certainly talking about the intensity mm-hmm. of the hurricanes intensifying. I think there's going to need to be a lot of discussion from every country about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and this is something that North Carolina certainly would need to take up as well. Another part of this that came out in the UN report was extreme heat forecasts in the east and the south, heavy rains. There are a lot of things about this that if you're sitting in the south, you have to be stressing about it. And one other thing I would point out as well is that we're talking about some severe climate change impacts in the year 2040. In the past, perhaps we were thinking, hey, these are our grandchildren who are going to be impacted by this. Now we're talking about our children and ourselves. So I do think that we hope that our state leaders are taking a hard look at what this means for our businesses, what the impacts will be for our economy, to try to take these aggressive steps that the UN suggested for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. While this report did consider the economic costs of the damage from the climate change, there wasn't really any consideration of the economic and practical realities that governments are going to face. We need to see some really strong review of this by our state leaders and our federal leaders, and a lot stronger than some of the comments we heard from our president yesterday, suggesting that he's seen some reports that say the climate is fabulous. I think those were the words he used. There's going to need to be some very thoughtful review of this, and I hope that our state leaders will consider that.
I agree with Billy. I think that certainly a review, a very serious review, is in order. Some of our listeners may recall on the state of things just this week, one of the segments was from Asheville, and they had experts from NC State and other. I was kind of interested to learn that. I always learn something on the state of things, but I was interested to learn that there's sort of a hub of experts and review and studies being done in Asheville. You know, we always think of those being done at the coast, but, you know, we are, and we have experts right here again at NC State and other places that are looking at it, public health, you know, how that affects it. So I think, first of all, it is being reviewed. There is research that's being done, and I think a lot of that research is being looked at nationally as well. But I think it's also important, as I looked through this study, one of the things that really struck out to me is sort of the possibilities. You know, the report was filled with words like could be possible, could worsen, if, could be linked. You know, it was a lot of could be's and maybe's. And so I think it's important too, as we look at this and make probably some major, at least some policy changes, that we keep things in perspective of what the real danger and threat is, and make sure that whatever burdens or regulations, mandates that are put in place are in line with the real threat that we have. But I think, you know, again, this is an opportunity for North Carolina to be a leader across the country of looking at these things. And, you know, this report is just another, another reminder that a lot of people are talking about this. It's a very controversial issue, and really glad to know that North Carolina is at the forefront of reviewing it. I just hope that the review remains to be very realistic in what the threats are, and what the expectations and what any changes in regulations might be.
So I'm going to pick on you both because neither of you really answered the question. Is there something feasible that you think the state can do and or that we as individuals should be thinking about doing, a specific proposal or a specific action? And if you think that's too minute or just ridiculous and you can't identify one, that's cool too. But I just want to give you one more opportunity to tackle that.
Answer the question you asked? I'll take a stab at it. You know, we're looking at a global problem here. Anything that I happen to do in my backyard is going to have virtually no impact at all. If it makes me feel better as a citizen, and you know what I plan to do and what I would encourage people to do is to read the research, read things, and there's suggestions, you know, whether you recycle, I mean, you know, all, you know, wear more cotton, you know, all kinds of things that you as an individual can do. What can the state do? To be honest with you, I don't know that there's much that the state of North Carolina does. What we may see are some proposals looking at development, and this circles back to the first part of this segment, Jeff, some of the requirements along the coastline, whether it's development, runoff, those kind of things we may see. But, you know, we can do everything in the world in North Carolina, but we can't build a fence around North Carolina or build a bubble around North Carolina that's going to make a difference.
I could insert a President Trump joke about a wall here, and I will not do that, Billy.
Support solar, support wind energy. These are ideas that are not brand new. In North Carolina, we have seen, I wouldn't say outright speaking in press conferences, opposition to these ideas from our leadership, but we've seen, frankly, little to no support. And at times it seems like it protects existing industry at the expense of the growth of these green energies. So I think, you know, Becky mentioned a moment ago about the controversy about climate change, and certainly that's feeding some of the back and forth of the forms of energy that we support. But I would add that while it is controversial in politics, it's not very controversial among scientists on the whole. So I think that we need to see, at first, we need to see our leaders really, really take this research seriously. Don't dismiss it as some sort of leftist conspiracy, or as the president has suggested in the past, a hoax put up by the Chinese to harm our economy. Take it seriously and then look at these other forms of energy, which we know there's room in our economy to grow with.
Okay, finally, Wake County District Attorney Lauren Freeman is asking the State Bureau of Investigation to look into allegations made against House Speaker Tim Moore. A News and Observer article last month raised questions about whether the Republican leader used his position for personal financial gain as it relates to a private pharmaceutical company. According to Moore himself, years after helping a different effort, a controversial development project, move forward at the legislature, he provided legal services to one of the developers. The speaker is firm that he never mixed personal work with legislative duties. Billy, is this a pattern of something illegal, or is Moore perhaps just carefully working in some of the gray areas?
You know, the conversation I heard from the folks who were suggesting the investigation seemed to be that they didn't consider this a criminal matter as much as it was a politician perhaps using their position for professional gain. I'll say I come at this as a reporter for years, and I think a lot of the facts that we're dealing with right now, we need to get more facts and draw some straighter lines. Certainly, I think that the optics are pretty bad of some of these deals. And when we talk about the land deal in Durham, the 751 South development some years back, I was reporting in Durham at the time, and I can recall how upset people were about what they viewed an overstep by the legislature to force that development through. So some of these details are really interesting to people who saw that 751 South development and the legislature's reach into that. So I think that there are a lot of folks right now who need to take a close and hard look at the speaker's relationship between his professional life and his political life. And if we do see something in there that's inappropriate, and there are fantastic reporters like Dan Kane at the News and Observer who are working on this, if they find some things, then I think that we need to hold the speaker accountable. At this point, there's a lot more to this story, and I would suggest that we'll probably find out more soon.
Well, I agree with Billy. I think we need more facts before we jump to conclusions or assumptions, and as the Wake County Prosecutor Lauren Freeman has said, this is not a criminal investigation. So I think it's important to recognize that up front. You know, I've also seen this just over the years with a part-time citizen legislature. it is a challenge for people who work, and particularly lawyers, to go to the General Assembly and introduce bills, consider policy issues, consider issues that are important to their constituents, who in many cases may be their clients. And this applies not just to lawyers, but, you know, to insurance salesmen and educators, you know, in some of the decisions that we've had about education. It's across the board. And so it's a little bit of a gray area, and one that I think we have to be careful of. I think if you put too many regulations in place and keep people from earning a living, then there are even going to be fewer people who are going to be interested in running for office and serving. And I think we need to be careful on that end of it. You know, under our North Carolina law, the way that it is, the ethics thing, and a lot of this came about after the controversy with Jim Black, and, you know, he took bags of cash at the International House of Pancakes. And but the ethics laws that have gone into place since then, they do not force disclosure for legislators. It does require recusal if there is an issue that comes before that they have a conflict. So, you know, some of these things, and I think it's important to remember, too, Tim Moore is a very good lawyer. He understands the law and understands the black letter of the law. You know, maybe we need to go back. Maybe this is a discussion we need to have. Do we need to change the ethics regulations? Mm-hmm. Do we need to change the law so that there is more transparency? But again, I think we have to be really careful with that, because we don't want to prohibit people from being able to earn a living if they want to serve in the General Assembly. We have a hard enough time getting good people to run for the General Assembly. I don't think we want to put up more barriers for that.
All right, Becky. Finally today, a source tells me, this is on deep background, that you may or may not be entered into a contest at the state fair. And I'm trying to gauge a handicap from you about whether or not you're expecting to win a ribbon.
Of course I am expecting to win a ribbon. I had seven entries this year. Seven. A variety of things. Everything from jalapeno peppers to pear preserves. You may be aware, if you know me, if you've known me for five mm-hmm. minutes, I've probably mentioned that I do have a blue ribbon from the state fair for my apple butter that I won in 2009. Not that I'm competitive, but I have been, I've been entering things and cooking up a storm in anticipation of additional blue ribbons.
Where's that blue ribbon today, and which do you think has the best chance of winning a blue ribbon this year?
My blue ribbon is hanging. I had it framed. It is in my kitchen for everyone to That's see awesome. Who walks into my house. And my best chance, I tell you, I think my best chance is cranberry raspberry preserves.
Sounds pretty good. All right.
But I think, but all seven, you know, all seven are contenders.
We'll have to do something for you if you pull off seven blue ribbons. Thanks, as always, for listening to the WUNC Politics Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Tell your friends and family about it as well. For Billy and Becky, I'm Jeff. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again soon. Let me into-